Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everyone to New Jersey, where the Nittany Lion basketball team will take on Rutgers tonight. Important game for both teams at this stage. Penn State's 4-4 in conference play. If Penn State were to win tonight, it would be their third quad one win. So if you're asking when you talk about quad ones, quad twos, and so forth, this is the criteria for what a quad one win happens to be. One is if you win on the road against a team in the top 75, quad one. If you win against a top 50 team on a neutral floor, quad one. If you win at home against a top 25 team, that's a quad one. So that's how it breaks down. The NFL playoffs are a little less complicated. You win the game, move on. All right, so... And Matt saw that firsthand, by the way, on Saturday night.
Exactly.
Yes. Went out. Do you realize? I did not realize. Before I get back to basketball for a moment, you realize how many wins the Giants had against the NFC East this year?
It was, let's see, they swept Washington. It was three.
They had one. They split with Washington.
Oh, right. Yeah. So they had one.
They split
right.
with Washington. They got swept by Dallas, and they got swept in three games by Philadelphia.
Right.
The Giants this year ended up 10-8-1. They were 1-6 against the NFC East.
That's crazy.
They only lost two games outside of the division. How about that for craziness? It's almost like the Steelers going 4-0 against the NFC South. That's wild. But the Eagles beat everybody, so that's not the issue. The Eagles beat everybody, which is crazy. It's not crazy. They're just more talented, you know. And the Eagles are a well-coached team. There's no getting around it. And it'll be for Brock Purdy, by the way. He's the fifth rookie quarterback to start an NFC championship or a conference championship game. Do you know what the record is of the four previous rookie quarterbacks?
I'm going to guess not great.
It's 0-4. Okay.
I'm here
to give you some semblance of confidence.
Well, thank you.
You know, it's like, because right now, you're worried.
You got that vibe yesterday.
I've got that vibe. I've had that vibe for months from you. And you keep winning every week, so it's all good. Okay. So let's get, I want to get into something Micah Shrewsbury talked about yesterday. Now we've had a little bit of fun. See, I had fun word, like you came out in a good end of it, don't you think?
Definitely. I'll take
it. You know, it's like I'm just trying to, you know, kind of keep you calm. You know, till we get to the pig segment.
That's true, yes.
Come on. God, have some laughs. You can't. I was talking with Jason Horowitz today. And Jason, of course, he hosts a show on Sirius. And he's now the play-by-play voice of the Las Vegas Raiders. He'll be doing the game on BTN tonight. And I've known Jason for years. Absolutely great guy. And he was talking to me about... There are times where I, for example, listened to yesterday's show, for example, that he had as I was driving in here, and you know, the guy he was working with was, with all due respect, very smart, nice guy, the whole deal. I'm not going to get into who it was, but kind of a flatline. And Jason is the guy that loves to have fun on the show, and he's a fun guy and a funny guy. Right, no getting around him. Right, just a fun guy, and a terrific broadcaster. Okay, But he says, you know, he says he likes to keep it a little bit loose. I said, yeah, that's sort of what we try to do on our show. We try to keep it a little bit loose, and then when it's time to get serious, we get serious. So, yeah. You're having fun, aren't you?
I always do.
Just say yes.
I did. I always do.
All right. So let's get to what Micah Shrewsbury talked about yesterday in his press conference. He was talking about the importance of atmosphere. And Rutgers, to its credit, has gone from you couldn't wait to see them on your schedule because they could either extend your winning streak or end your losing streak, to now being obviously a really tough team to play because Steve Peichel has come in. He has done a terrific job. And, you know, he's got a really good big man in Cliff Amore. He's been able to bring in Cam Spencer, whom you saw a lot, Matt. You see more of Cam Spencer than I have because
yeah.
You saw him play against Bucknell when he was at Loyola. So you know a lot more about him in person than I ever will.
Very good basketball player.
Yeah, it's the first time I've seen him in person. And he's the shooter. He's the scorer. I mean, it's a 40% three-point guy, the whole deal. Morey's really tough inside. And McConnell's one of the top defensive players, not just in the Big Ten, but really in the country. 6'7", long, good perimeter defense, lateral movement, just a good defensive player. It is a team that grinds the game down, but it's a team that really plays off of its fans, too. So they have 8,000 in there. They have all the season tickets. They're sold out to their credit. And the fans, the way the building is built, they're right on top of the court. Right? That's the way it is. It's an old building. You might I was telling Micah and Jason Horowitz today, I said, you know, this building goes back so far that when the Nets made the move from Uniondale and became the New Jersey Nets. They were in the process, not the Nets, but the state of New Jersey, of building the Meadowlands Arena next to Giant Stadium. Well, in the transition from Uniondale to the Meadowlands before it was finished, they played 2 years in that building. That's how far back it goes. That's in the mid-70s, mid to late 70s, that the Nets played in that building. And I was talking about how I did the 1989 Atlantic 10 championship game in there. I've done a lot of games. I mean, the first game I ever did in that building was in 1983. It was the 82-83 season. That's how far back that building goes. Now, because it goes back even, you know, like 6 years before that. So it's an old building. You know, they can't really, at the moment, they're trying to figure out ways to fit more seats maybe into corners and things like that. The concourse there is a horror show. It's awful. All right? They have, I think the building has two bathrooms. Two. All right? The gift shop is outside the building in a tent that closes a half hour before tip-off. Okay? This is the setup they have because of what they have at the particular moment. Yet, they'll cram 8,000 in there, and they will create a loud, raucous atmosphere in there tonight. So Micah Shrewsbury talked about the value of atmosphere yesterday. And he discussed, you know, what it can mean. Now, Penn State's coming off a game where they had over 11,200 at the Jordan Center, and it was a good crowd. I thought they were for the most part into it, and again, for the most part, it's interesting. Like talking to some people after the game, like, "Well, that game was really kind of a drag." And I'm sitting there like, "Only time they shot 68% in the second half." Oh yeah, the second half. I got, hey guys. Guys, that's why you play 40 minutes. Okay, that's 68% is what they're capable of doing. That's entertaining basketball. You are not talking about a team, for example, that is boring to watch in any way, shape, or form. The teams they're playing against are trying to make it boring. The teams they're playing against are trying to drag it down. And a game that was two-thirds of the way extremely well officiated had one guy that dragged it down on Saturday. Simple as that. And I've talked about this before. The conference has to become a better officiated league in some ways. There's some guys that are absolute quality in this league that I trust in any game. If they make a mistake, it's only because they made a mistake. It's not because of incompetence. People can make mistakes. You're not going to announce a perfect game. You're not going to play a perfect game. You're not going to coach a perfect game. You're not going to officiate a perfect game. You know, but then there's calls that are made that are like, oh, what's the competence on that play? And the guy that made those calls happened to be somebody who was officiating his second conference game of the season. No names, we'll leave it at that. It's also a big man-dominated league. You wonder why the Big Ten struggles in the NCAAs at times? They're proud of all the big men they have. When they get into the NCAA tournament, guess what? People work around that. Right? That's why you're not seeing, the big man is prevalent in the Big Ten. It is not prevalent across the country, and they work around it because they got more passing flow. They use their quickness. You have more finesse officiating across the country in several different areas. Not perfect, but it's more finesse. So he's talking about atmosphere and what the crowd can mean. Let's be honest. The Jordan Center is the Jordan Center. You can't really rectify mistakes that were made 27 years ago. You can't. The mistakes that were made. And I've told you the first time I walked into the building for a Penn State basketball practice was the first week of January, 1996. And I looked around and I said to somebody, I said, what the heck did you do in here? They go, yeah, isn't it great? I said, no, what did you do in here? And he said, everything's so far away. I said, what's the thought process here? Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like I haven't been in a few buildings. I mean, Dick Girardi and I, you get bored on the road. So he's been in 168 different buildings, and I'm now up to 152. So it's not like I've never seen a lot of buildings and designs, just with eyeballing it. But you can't do anything about that now. It is what it is. Yeah, you can't go back and rectify it, change it. There, a lot of people have different suggestions. And I appreciate all the suggestions because people are trying. It's like you're brainstorming. Let's go back to Rec Hall. Well, the problem is Rec Hall now has been changed a bit over time. And because it's been changed, you can't fit as many people in there. You have to push the seats back, and you have to buy a court, literally. You can't use the floor in there. You have to buy a court and bring it in there and set it up, and it's going to have to be set up every single time, just like it is in the Jordan Center anyway. You're going to have to set it up. So, all right, and the parking around Rec Hall is not great. I've had people say, hey, how about going over to Pegula? Okay, well, that's an ice hockey arena. It's not like I haven't done a lot of games in ice hockey arenas in my lifetime. You know, between, you know, obviously places like Ohio State and Wisconsin, they're played in ice hockey arenas. You know, the Big Ten tournament's going to be at the United Center. That's where the Blackhawks play. You know, I can go through the long list of NHL arenas I've been in the course of my career. But that place is built for hockey, and it should be a hockey arena. You know, it's probably the right size, but then you've got to do things with seats to get things closer with seats, you know, and that's hard to do. So the Jordan Center is what you have to live with, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the next half hour. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Route 11 at 15 Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, they are the best brands out there with great warranties, and that warranty means so much. Well, the budget may be screaming pre-owned inventory. If it is, well, Sunbury Motors. The Sunbury Motors guarantee means everything to your pre-owned inventory purchase. And a fabulous service department that, by the way, backs everything up. Great technicians. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. You can give out the phone number. I don't have it in front of me. So if people want to join in on this, that'd be great.
Yes, new number, 570-743-9565.
You can repeat that.
570-743-9565. No more 800 number.
Yeah. Now, if you're wondering, there are a lot of people that used that number last week. They got a hold of the suit. Yeah, we're sorry. Yeah.
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells out.
I said in the email, you shouldn't have given your own number out. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so let's get back to the atmosphere part of it. Now, look, obviously the time of games does mean something. There's no question. That's why I've complained about the Saturday part of it for a long time. You know, that when Penn State played on Saturday against Nebraska, it was the first time in 3 years they had played a game in the Jordan Center on Saturday with the students on campus. 3 years. I mean, come on. Well, that makes no sense at all. None. And it doesn't take market research to sit there and figure out what works in this particular market. And somebody said to me about, well, you know, we do market research. I said, look, I've done 41 years of market research. I said, what are you talking about? I sit there. So I see. So I understand and I know what has worked over the years. And that's why, you know, that's why we've talked about it. All right. So before we get back into that, let's get to our good friend Neil Coulong, who has picked every game correctly in the playoffs so far. No surprise, Neil. Welcome. Did I lose Neil? Hello, Neil.
Neil. And I'm still in mute, but now I'm not. Sorry. What I was saying was, yes, I have picked every game in the playoffs, and that's kind of my own personal Super Bowl. I don't actually bet on games, but I will pick against the spread for the playoffs just because one year I came close. I missed on one game 1 year, and I'm on that streak now, so I'm feeling mixed about this because I think it's a tough slate this weekend. But, yes, up to this point, it's been fantastic.
Yes, it is a tough slate, as a matter of fact. And, by the way, on mute, you have no idea over the years how often the audience had hoped that was on mute. So,
one of those all things, right. You put it on mute? Yeah, I'll remember. Nope.
Sure. Never do. Sounds great.
Not the first time.
So let's, when you look at the Eagles, it's you watch them and you know they're outstanding. They've been the best team. Yet they have played one of the worst schedules I've ever seen. I mean, even in the playoffs, they got a team that they already knew that they were way better than. When you look at them, and they're 2.5-point favorites over the 49ers, with a third-string quarterback who's a rookie in there. Your thoughts?
It's so tough. I went back and forth on San Francisco for that very reason. You don't know when the Brock Purdy train is going to slow down, but any historical evidence, all logic, everything tells you it can't continue. At some point, he's going to run out of track. You know, there are only so many opportunities you can give a player like that. And hats off to San Francisco in coordinating this, managing through it. It's a testament to how well prepared they are, how smart Purdy is, and how well their offense can execute without the presence of high-level, even mid-level passing ability. I would think at some point somebody is going to say, we can challenge this team hat on hat up front, try to take away these intermediate routes, create bodies in the middle of the field to slow McCaffrey down out of the backfield, and make Brock Purdy find a second option multiple times. And it for me, Philadelphia's defense probably likes the idea of that. It's a secondary that can take the ball away, and there's no way Purdy's not going to – he's going to have to be excellent for San Francisco in this game. I'm a big fan of what San Francisco does. I think they're if they have above-average quarterback, I think they're favored in this game. The fact that Philadelphia has that quarterback, and they have probably more depth overall as a team, I would give them the advantage here just simply because I think they can get to Purdy a few more times than what San Francisco is going to be able to do to Jalen Hurts. And I speak highly of both of these teams because to me, and I know all the hype is really going into the AFC, I think this is the Super Bowl. I think these are the two best teams in football game to game. And watching them slug it out is really kind of what I've been looking forward to and hoping was going to come down to in the NFC. But Purdy is the outlier of the whole thing. I don't know if I would bet heavily on the idea that they are able to scheme him up again against a very deep, very talented defensive team, but with an offense that can trade punches with San Francisco with a phenomenal defensive team as well. I don't think there's going to be a ton of points scored in this game, but overall I think Philadelphia just will have a little bit more toward the end. They won't get whatever Dallas did at the end of that game. That's not going to happen in Philadelphia. So I got to think, I'm pretty confident Philadelphia probably, they can, what is it, 2.5? They can cover that. I don't think they'll have too much of an issue with it.
Yeah, if I had to pick a coach that could scheme around the quarterback and put him in the best position to succeed, it would be Shanahan. Because he's got a running game to do this, he's got good players around him that helps. But there's, again, I'm with you. I just don't quite know how far this guy can take it. If Garoppolo were still the quarterback, Garoppolo's not the best quarterback in the league. He's not one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. No, he is not. But I would pick San Francisco to win, and maybe even comfortably if he were the quarterback.
Yeah, but to me, I think I might lean that way. Home field advantage is something I think that might not be as big against two teams that are as deep and as talented as both of them are. But yeah. I don't know if I'd give it Garoppolo in that. I don't know if I could do it with him. But it does speak volumes to how potent of an offense it is overall. It's not one player. It's not just one thing. And it's funny because I would normally say, you take Patrick Mahomes off the Chiefs, what happens? Well, Chad Henne walks on the field and marches him 98 yards for a touchdown. Apparently,
that's a great job.
As it turns out. But give him 6 games worth of film and give him a week to prepare.
No,
what happens?
Can't do it.
They don't have a 2-day rest advantage this time. They got to travel across the country. I don't have a whole lot of faith in Garoppolo. I think he's a solid quarterback. He's certainly not a great one.
No.
I don't know how good he is top to bottom, but I certainly don't think that Brock Purdy is all that good either.
But at least he's been in this spot before, and he's been in a spot where he's had to win on the road before, and I think that does speak to something. Because the been there, done that does not hurt you. Now, Cincinnati, I thought they were the most impressive team of the weekend. Because, look, they went into Buffalo in conditions, right? And they played just a terrific game against the Bills because they match up better against the Bills. I mean, matchups mean everything this time of the year.
This is just me. I'm patting myself on the back here. I am not at all surprised at the result of that game. For anybody who thought that Buffalo was a better team, they haven't been watching the second half of the season. If anybody thought that Cincinnati was going to be in any type of emotional fear because of everything that has happened and the power of the crowd in Buffalo, they haven't paid attention to Cincinnati over the last two seasons. This is a team that somehow itself into a defensive stalwart at the end of the year. I think Lou Amarillo needs much more credit than what he's getting.
And
I've talked about this. The most frustrating part of this whole thing, and I'm not trying to denigrate anybody with this, but the amount of praise that Joe Burrow is getting in the face of a defense that has allowed, I think, like 15 points a game in the last six games, including two dominating performances the last 2 weeks. It wouldn't bother me as much if this wasn't exactly what happened last year. It's the same thing. Joe Burrow is not playing at the level that everyone wants him to be playing at. Because Cincinnati wins does not mean Burrow is playing like the unquestioned MVP. Okay? Doesn't mean that he's not playing well. I think that he is. But their defense is doing everything. Their defense...
Well, see, that's what's interesting. When you're talking in the playoffs, who's everybody talking about? Well, they're talking about Leslie Frazier, Steve Spagnuolo. They never talk about Lou. I mean, he never gets talked about.
I don't get it.
There's never a word about him.
As a Steelers guy, if there's anybody I would want out of the division, it's him. His defense is untouchable. And I said this the other day. You don't want to call it a no-name defense because that's impossible today. I mean, it's the easiest statement you'll hear all day. Yeah. But at the same time, it's not like they've got Nick Bosa. It's not like they're rocking the front seven and the secondary that Philadelphia has. They're not. I mean, Trey Hendrickson's a fine player, excellent player. It's not like they have a bunch of all-pro players on that defense. They're solid, but they play so well together, and they are so well coached. They cover, as the cliche says, every blade of grass on the field. They hit with passion. They take the ball away. They rally all over the field. Like, hey, I'm okay with this guy. And for me, there are three defensive coordinators, probably four if you want to count Spagnuolo, who I wouldn't mind being the head coach of my team. And the fact that we are not talking about this over a season in which we saw scoring drop considerably in a relative sense, seeing the best defensive teams in the game advance in the NFC Championship, you're looking at all of these defensive factors, and everyone still wants to go to the quarterbacks and to offense, even when the quarterbacks and the offense aren't necessarily doing they're not performing at the level as what we've seen them perform. I'm not taking anything away from Joe Burrow, once again, an excellent player. His stats are like Joe Montana's in 1988. They're not eye-popping in comparison to today. Doesn't mean that he's not effective. He's very good at what he does. Patrick Mahomes has not had the Patrick Mahomes kinds of games. It was a three-year run in which he put up like 28 on the Raiders in a quarter. He did that like 3 years in a row. He's not doing that kind of thing anymore. You know, some of that is to do with Tyreek Hill, but defenses are getting much smarter. They're evolving more with the game, and it's becoming more and more prominent. And to me, that's really the immediate direction of the league. It's DeMeco Ryans. It's Jonathan Gannon. These guys are coming up with schemes and concepts, particularly in the secondary, that's taking away the quarterback's high-end ability to completely take over a game. It doesn't mean that they can't. It doesn't mean that they won't. It's just we're seeing much better defensive football, and we're just not talking about that. And that really bothers me. To me, Cincinnati is a shining example of it. We're still talking about Joe Burrow. They held the Bills to 10 points in Buffalo.
Amazing.
The Bills have 10 points in the first 4 minutes of the game against Pittsburgh. That's a great offensive team.
Yeah.
No reason to think that Cincinnati's defense is not capable of continuing playing at the level that it's at. And to be honest with you, they're going to beat Kansas City, and it's going to be because of their defense. But we will still talk about Joe Burrow. Just watch.
Because it's Burrow against Mahomes. And, you know, I know Mahomes is hurt. And you're right. Mahomes has been really good, but hasn't been great. See, everybody's been going with that cover two look because they're trying to keep the ball underneath. There's one surefire way that gets cover two totally off balance, and that's having a quarterback that plays, like Jalen Hurts.
That's
what people don't realize.
In
this cover two look, if you have a quarterback that can run and run the quarterback draw, that kills cover two.
And that's one of the reasons why the Eagles have been so effective.
It gives you numbers up front.
Yep.
And when you have a he automatically has space. That 11th defender, typically, whoever it is that you're spying in the quarterback is either a linebacker who's going to be much slower than Jalen Hurts laterally, or it's your safety who's playing back. And you're playing him back because you've got Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown on the field. That's not an easy duo to contain. If Philadelphia is smart enough, Shane Steichen's an excellent coach. He's going to be a head coach here next season as well. He has made Hurts into, not to take anything away from Hurts, but scheme-wise, they've put Hurts and his skill set into a position to succeed at a high level. And it's exactly as you described it. We're going to take what you give us. Whatever it is that you want to do, we're going to do the other thing because we have a quarterback that can do both of those things. That's why, to me, I've talked to Bills fans about this. It's so disappointing to see what Ken Dorsey did, by and large, with their run game, not just with Josh Allen, who got hurt. They were okay running the ball. You're not going to complain a whole lot, but they really needed to be able to run the ball. Philadelphia, Miles Sanders is a home run hitter. They can get him the ball anywhere on the field, and he's going to be effective. It doesn't need to be, you know, a 300-touch-per-season kind of effort, but they have that tool, and Buffalo didn't. Buffalo didn't utilize that as much. They continued to go with to go with Allen when he was hurt. He went out and made plays because he's a phenomenal player, but he wasn't at his best at the end, and we saw that. They broke down. They were dead the last 2 weeks offensively. That's another thing, too. Anybody betting on Buffalo after that Miami game, you think that was a fluke? No,
that's
what Buffalo is now. They didn't play well. Their last six games this season, they didn't play well. No reason in my mind to think that Cincinnati couldn't cover that. But to me, it is a huge advantage. And you've got the most athletic quarterback remaining now in Philadelphia. And that's a really hard player to stop. And San Francisco, probably the masters of that cover two that you're talking about, what DeMeco Ryans is doing with their safeties to try to mitigate some of that, it's going to be challenged. And Hurts, as we saw with the Giants twice this season, when you don't contain Hurts, he's going to beat you himself. And he can rush for 80 yards on seven carries like he did in the regular season against the Giants. And that has to be San Francisco's primary effort. If they want to stop him, they're going to need to get him to throw the ball deeper, and that means taking risks. That's tough to do.
Right. Oh, and God forbid you go to cover zero.
against, saw that
against Hurts.
Too.
Excuse me. There's no safety in the middle of the field. Let's take everybody back to the Rose Bowl on Singleton's 87-yard touchdown run. That was cover zero. There's no safety
cover
there.
Cover zero, one tackle equals touchdowns. That's what zero means.
Yep. And that's that's why the Bengals, by the way, are a point-and-a-half favorite. And a lot of that has to do, obviously, with what Las Vegas thinks about the injury to Mahomes. But it's more than just that. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole ball game right there.
Yeah, I think it's reasonable to say that now. I mean, it's going to fluctuate. That's going to be the most volatile line. In fact, I'm surprised it's even out right now, just considering that injury is significant. You know, I don't doubt that he'll play because you're going to put him out there, but a high ankle sprain coming back that quickly for as important as mobility is to Mahomes around the pocket, not, you know, running down the field, but buying himself time, making, lateral cuts and everything, he's not going to be the same player. And frankly, Cincinnati's going to feast on that. I don't think they're going to have much of a problem holding him in check, and I don't know how good Kansas City's defense is going to – I don't know how well they can accomplish that same goal against a Cincinnati offense that seems to be very much in rhythm with itself. You got Mixon back. You got Chase back. They're putting everything together that they need to. And with that, they're able to work around the protection problem that they've had. Burrow's releasing the ball. Up and down in his career to this point, him doing that, he's actually getting rid of it on time. He's not looking for the hero play every time. They're putting it on schedule. He's throwing catchable balls, and they're making plays after the catch. That's an offense that's going to win any time of the year, any period of the game. And I think Cincinnati has those advantages. Kansas City is losing its best player. I don't know any team that gets better after losing their best player. And I'm not saying he's not going to play, but Mahomes is not going to be the Mahomes that you would hope is capable of winning an AFC championship game, because he's not going to be able to move. You put him out there, that's fine. all due respect to the Michigan legend, Chad Henne, who I think is like my age, he's not going to come in there and do much against that defense. You know, if it comes to that, they're in significant trouble.
Yeah. Maybe down the, maybe during the bye week between the Super Bowl, between the NFC and AFC Championship games and the Super Bowl. Maybe, in fact, we do it next week. We can dissect the Cowboys, because I think we'll need the whole segment to do that.
there's something else. I watched the punt play, Pagano's punt play in the Colts against the Patriots.
Yeah.
I watched that in real time, and it felt like a car wreck. It was like, whoa, yeah. wait a minute. There are two guys there. Do you realize that? It's like they didn't even see it, and you're yelling at the TV more and more. And then you watch something that kind of looks like that in what Dallas is doing. And right away, you can see what they're going to do. He's not eligible. So he's going to snap the ball. He's going to release. This is straight out of Varsity Blues. That's the idea of what they were trying to say in that movie. But it's Elliott, and it's not Pollard. My guess is right. Pollard was hurt. They practiced that play with Pollard because Pollard's fast enough to get to the outside where he'd be able to get the hook and cut back and be able to have guys behind him and try to outflank everybody down the end. But it's like right away, it's like it's Elliott. He's not, no, this isn't going to work. And then Elliott seemed to feel the same way.
I know.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen in a football game, I shouldn't remember which defensive player it was, but whoever it was, seeing it, he kind of looks over his shoulder to see if anybody's coming back to the line, and he realizes they're going to snap like this. He like crow hops. He's like, oh boy, okay, and just goes straight through him. And you can see it right away. The way the play is designed. Elliott was the primary receiver. The initial catch, it was going to go to him. So it's like, what's going to happen now? The whole thing was just a train wreck. And yes, it's not. You know, you're not in a great spot. Anything that you do, but. To go out like that, to end a season like that on such a comical, embarrassing note. I enjoyed that thoroughly. I love the playoffs.
Next week we'll break that organization down. All right, Neil, always a pleasure, my good friend. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong joining us. It'll be a conversation, Matt, that you will enjoy.
Oh, I'm already licking my chops for that one.
Because you dislike Dallas.
And like Neil, I thoroughly enjoyed those final three plays of that game.
Yeah, I can tell. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back more in a moment. Great to have you with us today from New Jersey. There aren't many people who can do their show on the road from New Jersey, but we do. Here on News Radio 1070 WKO.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.